Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
So hi, everybody. Hi, Bob. Thanks for joining us again. The very timely podcast to discuss the latest market developments. What's going on with the 10-year Treasury bond yields going up? What is it about and why is it important?
As we talk, yields seem to be stabilizing with the 10-year US Treasury yield sort of between sort of 1.5% and sort of 1.6%. But having said that, you know, obviously over the last month to 6 weeks, you know, we've seen a significant rise in US Treasury yields. And you know, that likewise has, you know, given the correlation within bond markets, we've seen yield rises really across all markets. So you know, for example, JGB yields have risen, and that actually poses quite a significant question as to the Bank of Japan's policy of targeting a zero yield on the 10-year. So it looks as though that's changed. I think the ECB seems to be concerned about the rise in European yields. And, you know, we've seen, for example, the 10-year Bund yield still very much in negative territory, but it's now at minus 30 basis points. You know, whereas just a few weeks ago, you know, we were hovering around minus 50 basis points. But if we come back to, you know, your question on the US Treasury market specifically, I think a number of factors. The first factor is the surprising strength in the US manufacturing sector, but also in contrast to Europe, the US service sector. And if you look at the two key indicators, the manufacturing PMI and the service sector PMI, in January and February, those two indicators have risen quite rapidly, suggesting a strong expansion of the US economy. Now, within those PMI numbers, there is a subset of data focusing on inflation and particularly a rise in manufacturing and service sector costs, and also indicators of inflationary expectations. And I think what has concerned investors is that those inflation indicators within the PMIs all show quite a sharp rise in cost pressures. And in fact, in the manufacturing PMI, the sharpest rise in cost pressures since 2009. So I think, you know, one all accepts that deflation risks are now behind us, but certainly I think investors have become concerned about the potential rise in inflationary pressures. And one associated factor, obviously, is the impact on headline inflation from the rise in commodity prices. And we know, although oil prices have eased off temporarily, you know, at one stage recently, we've had North Sea Brent prices trading through $70 per barrel, West Texas Intermediate trading through $65 per barrel. And now one shouldn't forget that just going back to April 2020, Brent was trading down at $20 a barrel. And it's not just energy prices. We've seen a very large rise in industrial metals prices, you know, with copper approaching $9,000 per ton. And also food prices under upward pressure as well. And a good indicator there is the futures prices for corn, which has, you know, seen a sharp rise in the last 3 months. So factor one is the growth numbers have, I think, surprised positively to the upside. Factor two is concerns about rising inflation. Factor three, which the Federal Reserve and particularly Mr. Powell have pushed back on, but is investor concern about, will the Fed start to taper? The message from the Fed is they're not going to, although I think investors are somewhat skeptical about those statements from the Fed and are concerned that if we do get a rise in inflation against a background of strong growth, then at least at some stage, and it may be later in the year, the Fed may want to taper its quantitative easing program. And also expectations, I think, have been brought forward as to when the Fed will start raising interest rates. And you know, previously, those expectations were that rates would stay at the current low levels until 2023. Investors are increasingly now focusing on the possibility of interest rates rising in 2022. And then I think a final factor is the impact of the probable passage of the Biden government's fiscal expansion program. And that's, a $1.9 trillion program. Originally, there were concerns as to whether that program would not pass. Then, as it passed through the Senate, and it's now back in the House, and the House will probably vote on it, and it'll probably pass very quickly indeed. Obviously, and this was highlighted in the recent OECD report, that $1.9 trillion package will have a significant positive impact on US growth in 2021. And the OECD actually highlight that that impact on US growth will actually have a positive global impact. So fiscal expansion, monetary policy on hold, inflation expectations rising, growth numbers looking particularly in the States, particularly good at the moment. All of that means that investors have been shying away from bond markets. I think just one final point to make is that Warren Buffett, who one has to recognize is huge, has been hugely successful in his career and therefore is very influential in investor thinking. They made a statement highlighting the challenges of fixed income investment and highlighting that the current low level of yields are not attractive. So it's that complex of factors.
Do you think that this is temporary rise in yields and in inflation due to reopening of the economy, bottlenecks in the supply chain? And do you think it's we are in a trend that will go beyond this immediate post-COVID-19 economy? And can we afford to have rates going up for corporates, but also from a deficit and debt perspective? What is your take on this? Is it a transition that is a bit abrupt, shaking a bit the market, or is that something more long-term?
I think if one assumes core inflation, and obviously the headline inflation numbers in the short term are going to jump above the core inflation numbers, and that's because of the impact of commodity prices. But if we assume, which I think is a valid assumption, that by the end of 2021, that we have core inflation in the United States around 2.5%, in Europe around 2%, probably around 1% in Japan, and if one looks at emerging markets, emerging economies have seen a rise in inflation, notably in economies like Brazil and Russia. And some have obviously major inflation problems like Turkey, where inflation is still close to 14%. But if one assumes, just focusing on the States and Europe, that inflation is trending higher, and that the growth outlook post-COVID and with fiscal and monetary policies being very easy, I think it's fair to say that this upturn in growth, which will be profound in the second quarter of this year, and obviously growth numbers will settle down, but as we end 2021 and go into 2022, I think higher than average growth will be evident in virtually all of the major economies. And it's entirely possible that in 2022, that we could see US growth above 4% after a 6% growth number this year. And in Europe, we could see growth, at 3-4%, after the 4% plus recovery in 2021. So in that sort of growth and inflation background, I think that the trend in interest rates and bond yields is clearly up. And if one looks at a longer term projection, let's say end of this year, beginning of 2022, it's entirely possible to see 10-year US Treasury yields close to 2%. It's entirely possible to see bund yields, 10-year bund yields, actually move back into positive territory. Now, the pace, I think, will be very measured and controlled by the quantitative easing measures, and in the case of the European Central Bank, by their pandemic emergency purchase program. So the fact that the central banks are backstopping markets through these purchases of government bonds, I think, will slow down the rate of increase in yields. But to answer your question, are yields going to continue to trend higher? My answer to that is absolutely yes.
Are the central banks actually backstopping this? We saw that after Jerome Powell, I think it was an FT event, right? The market completely ignored what he said. It seems that the market doesn't really believe that this raise in inflation will be temporary, that they are fully committed to a full employment. And I think from the Fed, the trade-off is inflation above employment, or employment above inflation. what kind of level of inflation can they tolerate and what kind of level of rates they can tolerate, right? It seems the market doesn't really, at least at the moment, believe in the Fed and that more needs to be done. And what could be done by the Fed to control rates?
Well, I think Jerome Powell is very clear, which is that they will tolerate core inflation above 2% for a period of time. And you know, that period of time could be in excess of 6 months. I think you know, if we get core inflation rising to 3 to 4%, which I doubt, but if it did happen, I think they would be forced to taper their quantitative easing program. But let's not forget that the Fed balance sheet now is in excess of 7.5 trillion. And, this time last year, the Fed balance sheet was just over 4 trillion US dollars. So the extent of quantitative easing has been unprecedented. They are committed to purchasing US treasuries and mortgage-backed securities of 120 billion US dollars per month. And, we've got the ECB pandemic emergency purchase program of an order of magnitude similar to that of the purchases by the Fed. So the central banks are still very much in the market. Now, there has been this investor skepticism, but the reality is that although there was pockets of illiquidity in the US Treasury market in February, and we saw temporary rise in volatility, and although I think the trend in yields is higher, I do think that that powerful continued purchases by the Fed and the ECB will calm markets down. And as we talk, that seems to be the case. So I stick to my view that the yield trend is upwards, but the pace of that trend is going to be reasonably slow. So if we have a 10-year US Treasury yield of 2% at the end of 2021, that's only 40 basis points higher than where we are today. And if you contrast that with previous periods of sharp sell-offs in the US Treasury markets, that is, by definition, a very moderate move.
Do you expect any major announcement from the Fed and the ECB during March meetings? Or do you think as rates might go a bit lower, as you say, at the moment, they have a more time to essentially reassess the situation?
Well, we're doing this podcast just before the ECB meeting. I would be very surprised if the ECB changes interest rates. But I do think that in the press conference, the ECB will say that it is concerned by the rise in bond yields that we have seen so far this year in the Eurozone capital markets. And therefore, it is concerned that its policy of maintaining easy or favorable financial market conditions, that policy may be jeopardized. So if you actually read between those lines of language from the ECB, I think what that means is that they probably in the rest of March and April and potentially in May will actually increase their monthly purchases of Eurozone government bonds. So I think one thing that's quite interesting and which has become evident in January and February is that the ECB slowed down slightly its purchases. I think that's going to be reversed, and I think you're going to get a fairly strong statement from the ECB that they do not want the pace of yield increases to accelerate, and ideally they'd like it to moderate. I think they recognize they can't stop it, but certainly they can moderate it. And I think a similar message from the Fed. And I think, the Fed obviously is not going to change interest rates in March, or for that matter, probably in 2021. But I think you'll have a strong statement from Jerome Powell that he is concerned about labor market conditions. And although unemployment has fallen and will continue to fall, the US labor market is still nowhere near the level of employment that we saw, this time last year before the US economy got hit by the coronavirus. So I think the focus at the Fed meeting will be on continuing to support employment and labor market conditions and less concern about any inflationary pressures. And the Fed will reiterate, I think, their ongoing plan to 120 billion of quantitative easing on a monthly basis.
Can you quickly remind us where we stand in terms of employment in the US? What is considered full employment by the Fed, and how much more jobs needs to be created, essentially, for the Fed to consider that if inflation is rising and if they reach their full employment target, then, you know, rates and all those programs put under the pandemic needs to be wind down.
Yeah, well, I think so. Two factors. The first factor is obviously that this time last year, unemployment, you know, was less than 3.5%, and at the moment we're just over 6%. So there is still quite a long way to go to reduce that headline level of unemployment. In a recent speech, Powell also emphasized their concerns about pockets of unemployment, with, you know, unemployment in minority groups being much higher, unemployment in lower skilled groups being significantly higher. So it is those areas of pockets of higher unemployment that they have started to focus much more on. And that, again, you know, how do we interpret that? And I think that, you know, one has to interpret that by saying that, you know, that will delay any tightening or tapering action by the Fed in 2021. And, you know, they're focusing on those subsectors of the labor market.
This uptake of rates have triggered a major, very violent portfolio rotation on looking at equity markets, where people essentially sold their growth stocks and move into cyclicals and value stocks. What is your perception of this portfolio rotation? And do you think this is here to last in the next months and years?
Well, I think the first point to make, we are going to get a significant uptick in economic growth worldwide in the second quarter. And, you know, although European economies and the UK started 2021 with growth numbers being, you know, frankly weak just because of continued lockdowns because of the coronavirus, I do think that March data for the UK will rebound quite strongly. I think that as we go into April and May, Eurozone data will recover strongly. And that's against a background of, you know, as I discussed earlier, this growth recovery in the United States, and all the data out of Asia remains very robust indeed. And one figure which was really quite powerful is that year on year, Chinese exports for January and February have increased by over 60%. So that just sort of highlights the extent of the Asian recovery. Now, if one goes back to how investors were positioned in 2020 and early 2021, clearly, there was a focus on sectors which were fairly immune to the negative effects of the coronavirus, and most notably the tech sector. And we've seen, I think, an investor rotation in recent weeks out of those COVID, what I would call COVID-related sectors, such as tech, such as healthcare, into sectors which will benefit from an upturn in economic growth. So, for example, you know, the rise in energy prices, the rise in industrial metals prices has led to increased investor exposure to mining companies, to energy companies. The fall, you know, we've seen a profit taking in the tech sector, and that's against a background of tech valuations being very stretched. And, you know, if we had this conversation back in February, the US tech sector had a price earnings ratio of around 30. Other markets with a heavy tech exposure have also seen, you know, quite strong reversals and profit taking. So, for example, if you look in China, the CSI 300 index, which is reasonably tech heavy, has seen quite a sharp reversal. You know, other high tech related markets such as, you know, South Korea, the KOSPI index has also reversed. So I don't think this is necessarily investors taking a negative view on the tech sector. In fact, if anything, the opposite. It is just profit taking against a background of stretched valuations at the beginning of 2021 and a rotation into those sectors, whether it be consumer, whether it be industrials, whether it be materials, which will benefit from this rebound in economic growth for the rest of 2021. So that's the rotation. Is it justified? My answer is absolutely yes. I think it will probably settle down after, you know, the quite extreme volatility that we saw in late February and early March. And, you know, we could go through a period of consolidation. But that period of consolidation in global equity markets, I think, will be characterized by investors focusing on sectors such as industrials, which benefit from stronger economic growth. I think another factor is that whereas in the US, where the price earnings ratio is still well above 20, and where corporate earnings growth this year is projected at around sort of 22-23%. In Europe and Japan, corporate earnings growth, having slumped in 2020, is now projected to rise by 40% plus. And therefore, this recent outperformance that we have seen of the Eurozone markets, and also the UK is going through a catch-up phase, and also the Japanese market has performed well year to date. I do think that we will see European and Japanese markets, there are strong grounds for expecting them to outperform the US.
Thank you very much, Bob. Thanks for listening, and we'll be speaking again in 1 month.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more ICMA podcasts and further information on capital markets, please visit our website, icmagroup.org.